Back, what is up?
OMG, what's going on, everybody?
Hell yeah, we had to reflect instantly on upon arrival into the studio.
Well, it's been two weeks.
It's been a long time. And what time is it right now? What time is it?
Well, I think it's noon time.
What does that mean? I mean, I something.
If you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn at noon on the noon hour, you are then ipso facto. I don't know if that's the real way to say that.
That's good.
Ipso facto?
Yeah.
You are then vicariously listening to The Schroll Show with Seeing the Flow.
What's up, guys?
Yeah.
So I'm waving right now.
You're waving. No one can see you.
No one can see me. Hello, everybody. Hello.
Yes, and as always, I'm the C, and sitting across from me
is The Flow, guys. What's up? We're back.
Back. Big Flig. He was on vacation.
I was on vacation. But I downplayed it. Say that. It was a downplay. Because we were gone.
You shouldn't have to downplay it, because you know what? You earned that vacation, bro.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, so, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I don't know, I just, you know.
You worked
for
that.
I want the fans to know that we make so much money, we get to go on vacation, you know?
Yeah.
I want them to know about that stuff.
It wasn't like a vacation from our, radio star lifestyle. It was, basically from real jobs.
Yeah, basically. So this just happened to, because we do this every Sunday, so basically you gotta stop once in a while
right.
And just collect your thoughts and let them all melt away. And it was nice. It was stress-free.
Stress-free.
It was on the cruise. We're going all Caribbean all the time. St. Martin, Puerto Rico, and Labadee, Haiti.
Labadee?
Labadee. That was my favorite word on the whole cruise, because it seemed like something Adam Sandler would say in a movie back in the 90s. And so, yeah. So it was nice. I got to sit in the beach, got to go in the water, and I'm a little tan, and I got a little sick as well, so.
It wouldn't be a vacation if you didn't.
No, why could I just not completely enjoy myself without getting some sort of cold?
Not to mention you had a couple of things happen that you didn't expect, as far as like you thought you were going to get to scuba dive. You went.
Yeah, I know.
You took time off to go learn how to scuba dive and get a license and all that, and for the pure reason of doing it on the cruise.
I know, and it couldn't happen. It was the water was too choppy. It was too much. There was too many weather factors. But now we know. Don't really go on cruises around hurricane season, because you don't know what's going to pop up on that in that ocean.
Well, was there a reason why you went this time around this time specifically? Was it because like it was cheaper?
No, I don't think it was cheaper, because no, it wasn't cheaper. I'll say that, but it was. I wanted to go in September, but we were moving out, so we couldn't really do that. So
that's
like,
right.
I was like, all right, we'll just do it, in October, because last time we went with Andrew that time to Florida. Andrew, our friend,
and yes. I know
it was nice. It was like so nice. It was like chilling. There was like no kids around, so it was kind of awesome. So we're like, oh, we could just do that again, and then we had to realize now we got to play the weather. Now we got to do that.
Yeah.
So my weatherman. One class, three semester class.
Oh yeah,
of meteorology.
That old chestnut. You're trying to be a weatherman. Yeah. Oh man, I wish that would have happened.
I wish that would have happened now too. I could have predicted this, I can't, because I can't do math, I can't do chemistry, and I can't do physics, which are clearly three things you need to know
to be
a meteorologist.
All key elements of the meteorological. What is it called? Meteorological.
I can't. I don't even know anymore. They've stripped me of all the knowledge I once learned.
Well,
and shamed me.
Just to get on the topic of today's show,
yeah,
and to get off the topic of meteorology.
Yeah, it's sunny outside today. It's unusually warm on this time of year.
Is it
in the 60s, going into the upper 70s.
People always say, we're talking about the weather. It's like the ultimate like water cooler conversation.
Like just complete bullshit.
Yeah, what if you talk about like weathermen. Is that different? Is that different than talking about, like, if I say, you know Sam Champion?
He's like, yeah, he's a good weatherman. He's a good one.
Mr. G, remember him?
I love Mr. G. He was a gangster. That's why I think he was Mr. G.
I think was he your inspiration, like, when you wanted to be a weatherman?
No, I just thought it was cool. I don't really think I don't know if the. Does anyone really have a weatherman like icon?
Yeah,
it's like, yo, Sam Champion really delivered the news funny tonight.
No,
just like something cool. I don't know. You get to be outside and get to
be in
the weather, and like, I don't know, you get to, it's like being a scientist without being like crazy scientist.
Right. So you'd want to be like a meteorologist, but not like a guy that's on the TV pointing at the things.
Yeah, no, actually, like, I feel like you're more personality than you are.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess they're both, but maybe
they're probably like someone's feeding you the information.
Oh yeah, because they got like teams. Because I actually met a couple of meteorologists at my friend's wedding. Couple years ago, and they were they're actually disgruntled meteorologists, because they just like sit in the back room and they're like looking at like schematics and maps and shit. And
being a scientist can't be easy. I mean, it's got to be difficult.
I just going from those classes I had to take, and oh man, it was so bad. But so I learned very quickly that's how life is good sometimes. It humbles you rather early in life.
Like Iron Sheik, break back, Mac Humble.
Yeah, I was made humble plenty of time in this world. But now we're on to what we're the topic on hand.
We are humbled by our guests.
Yes, we are humbled by them.
today we have Cymbals Eats Guitars on the show. Cymbals Eats Guitars.
That's like a question. Cymbals Eats Guitars.
Cymbals Eat Guitars.
Yeah, it's a.
But I want to say eats because it's like. That's the way it would be phonetically if you were saying it in a sentence.
Like me with a bad case of big mouth and build it to break it.
Yeah, it's okay. Cymbals Eat Guitars.
They're coming on.
They're a local band. They've been around for a long time, and they've worked with bands that we like, Kevin Devine.
Oh yeah,
and the like. So we're excited to have them on.
They'll be phoning in like ET in about about 5 minutes.
So let's play a track from their most recent album.
Okay. Yeah. Just.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Are you cool with that?
I am cool with that. We're just waiting. Once you plug that in.
Oh, okay.
All right. I don't want that pop to ruin our listeners' eardrums. They're very precious.
That's true. Good point.
But if they're deaf, maybe they would know they're listening and just keep it going.
So I keep you around because your care for the listeners is so strong.
That's my scientific mind. It's a underdeveloped scientific mind.
Right.
I'm using
one
right now.
Meteorology class you took.
Oh yeah, three online, no less. Not even in a classroom.
Yeah, I would think that would be a class you'd have to actually take class.
That's what I'm saying.
Put on you.
I'm like
a
reading all these like charts and weather, like what wind is blowing northwest into southwest.
You're like you're licking your finger, like
I'm like, oh, I gotta find someone to help me with this class because no one else can.
Okay, so the album's called Pretty Years by. Cymbals Eat Guitars,
and that just came out last September.
I want to play this song because it's named after an awesome classic Bruce Springsteen song called 4th of July, Philadelphia, Sandy.
So, Sandy.
But the real one is 4th of July, Asbury Park.
Oh
Sandy.
Yeah.
So that's why we thought it was a cover, and I'm like, wait, no, actually, it's not. It's supposed to be Asbury Park, but they. Called it Philadelphia, and I don't know why. I'm not sure if they have connections to Philadelphia. I thought they were kind of from this New York area.
From that Staten Island vein, but we're going to find out.
We're going to do our Wikipedia questions.
A Wikipedia fact check of the day. I wish we need a drop for that.
What a
Wikipedia fact check question.
Okay, we'll think about that while we listen to this hot jam. New recent song from Pretty Years, the new album by Cymbals Eats Guitars, and it's called 4th of July Philadelphia Sandy, and we'll be back with the band. After this, you're listening to The Stroll Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. A joke, like rubber banded bottles of drugs.
Through one every second, the path that leads through. brought a scary old gun in its waistband. Suddenly lifted, all the adrenaline shot my nervous system. So I'd be present and grateful for every second. Later the feeling faded, I couldn't help it.
Yo, there it is. Cymbals eat guitars.
Cymbals eat guitars.
I you know us. I didn't pluralize. I didn't pluralize.
You didn't. No. I respect your.
You know my attention to detail is so fine.
What would I say? Your grammar game.
It's always on point.
Your grammar game is.
I'm never at a loss for words.
By the way, today's episode is brought to you by Big Boy's Deli. If you want to eat like a big boy. Go to Big Boy's.
Yeah, that's what I gotta say. If anyone knows this, we always eat Big Boy. We always call each other Big Boy and all this stupid stuff. But there's actually a deli. I don't know. You know the street over here, but you put that on there.
It's very low.
It is low. But we stopped at Big Boy Deli and for the first time today. And I gotta say, prices. Oh my God, so good.
Prices are nices.
Yeah, and they even got like some sodas that you never get to see. They got the Sprite Remix, the Tropical Punch, whatever it is. Haven't had that shit since I was like 8 years old.
They had like the blue Mountain Dew.
Yeah, you know the Voltage? Never see that. You never see that stuff. But they had all the rarities, and it was beautiful inside. Like it was like...
Very nice.
Like it was like you were going to stand... Like the counter was so high, it was like you were going to talk to a judge. I'm just like looking up, and I'm like, oh, can I have a bagel? And the guy's just like, yes, you can.
Yes, my son.
That is only $2. And I'm like, that is perfect.
I got bacon and cheese on a roll. I got a large water.
That was very large.
And a large coffee. $4.
$4. Hang on. We got Cymbals Guitar coming in right now. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what's up? Is this Matt?
Yes, it is.
Hey, man, how you doing? This is Steve and Paul on the Stroll Show. How you doing?
Hey, Steve and Paul. I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing good, man. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it, man. Appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Can you hear me all right? I'm using my earbuds.
Yeah, they sound really good.
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear, man. So what's going on with you? How you doing? How you doing today? How's your Sunday going so far?
Yeah, it's a little early.
It is a little early. It's just started. Just sitting in my apartment, having coffee, waiting for a food delivery to come.
Oh, hell yeah. What'd you order? I'm curious.
I ordered an egg sandwich, and my boyfriend ordered something else. I'm sure he was out real late last night, so we're kind of struggling this morning.
Hey, no, I feel you. You guys, you were just on tour, right? Recently with Cymbals Eat Guitar.
Yeah. We finished our tour about, I want to say, 10 days ago, thereabouts.
Okay.
We've all been kind of working on re-entry into the real world.
Yeah, it's gotta be tough. How long were you guys out for?
We were out for about 5 weeks. We did like a full lap of the States plus a couple Canada shows.
Oh, nice. You see, that's 5 weeks is like it's not super long. It's not like you're out for like 3 months, but it's long enough where when you come back, I imagine it's like you're in a different mindset. You have to, like you said, readjust to everyday life, right?
Yeah. 5 weeks is definitely long enough. The longest we've ever done is 10, and that was like completely like psychosis inducing.
I feel like you need like a warm shower or something like that. you know, yeah, like a warm bed.
Yeah, but 5 weeks was definitely, it was enough.
Yeah. So were you guys like the headlining band, or did you open for some other bands, or was it kind of like a mix and match of both, or what kind of tour was it for you?
It was a headline tour. It was actually the first time in a few years we've done a full headline tour of the whole country.
Wow.
So it was nice to get out and do that and kind of see where we're at in terms of crowd, in terms of, like, you know, what people really want from us.
Right, right.
We spent a lot of time doing support tours for our last record. So we kind of knew what to expect, but not really. It was kind of a new show that we were putting on. You know, new record,
right, right.
Headlining, you know, playing longer sets than we have before. So it was cool.
How did you find the crowds this time as opposed to previous tours? Was it an improvement, different?
It was both improvement and different. You know, it's we're starting to realize that we're, you know, yes, we're out on the road, we're promoting a new record, but we're also we have a catalog to tour on now, and people want to hear stuff from all of our records. Which is, it's something that kind of snuck up on us.
Right.
You know, I want to say that we were fully prepared to, like, deliver what these crowds wanted in terms of, like, you know, cymbal D guitars, greatest hits sets, but in our mind, we don't have any hits. So, you know, we were playing mostly the new record, and a lot of people were saying, how come you guys aren't playing stuff from the first two records, or you guys didn't play this song from the last one?
Oh, wow.
So that was surprising to us and cool to see that there are people who are out there and they're there because they love the catalog and not just the new record.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, and you were saying how you wanted to kind of like gauge the crowd and see, you know, they're taking their reaction and stuff, and it clearly shows right there, because it's like they're like, hey, you know, like maybe an album you haven't, like, you know, revisited or really played some songs for in a while, and it really is now starting to resonate with people. And I think that's really a you know, it's definitely a telling sign in a good way. So, you know, at least in that sense, it's a very good good omen.
Yeah, I agree. It's very cool. The other thing that was surprising is that a lot of our fans are, they've been with us for a really long time. You know, we're talking to people who say, like, oh, I was 17 when your first record came out, and it was so important to me, and now I'm, like, married and I'm a dad.
Wow.
That's surreal, because you guys started back in the like the
07 around that time?
07, 09, around that area?
Yeah, like 2009, yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time to be going at it now, because what was it, 2006? I was like, what year is today? Yeah. Like, well, that's 7 years, but, you know?
But it's weird, because it's like, it is a long time in years, but as a band, you still kind of like can consider yourselves like a young band, like you're saying, so it's weird how it evolves without you even realizing it. Like, you're on the road, and like, you're putting on a show, and then some point you realize, wow, this tour is different than the last one. Like it just kind of like you said, sneaks up on you, and that must be kind of gratifying, right? Like, when you realize, wow, like, now we have this catalog, now we have these songs that people actually want to hear. So when you do the next tour, do you think that's going to affect how you put together the set and the show?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for doing so much support touring for Lose for the last record, it was all about just, you know, promote the record that you have out. And, you know, we did not spend a lot of time playing for our crowd. And now it's very apparent to us that we need to respect the fact that people want to hear more of the catalog, and probably want longer shows and, you know, all the stuff that comes with that. It's going to be challenging because our records are very different,
right?
You know, from one to the next. But it's a fun challenge. It's a cool problem to have.
Yeah, definitely. Has it been consistently the same members of the band throughout your career, or have you kind of changed members a few times?
We've changed members a few times. This most recent record is, it's the first time we've made two records in a row with the same four people.
Ah, okay.
So the band as it is now has been the band since around like late 2012.
Okay.
But before that, We had a different drummer. And before that, for the first record, it was pretty much just Joe writing all the parts and getting people to play on the record when they could. Mm. And then kind of putting together a different band to do all the touring for that record.
I see.
So Brian Hamilton, the keyboard player, and myself, we both joined in 2009 as part of that phase. And then I guess the second big shift was like about 3 years later when we got a different drummer, when Andy Dole joined the band. Mm.
Now, is that weird for you to, like, you're saying having to play some of the older songs? Like, is it different? Because it's a different band than maybe had written some of your classic songs or the older songs that you guys have. Is it kind of weird or difficult to have the current band go back and revisit some of those songs, or do you change them and make them kind of like updated to what the band does currently?
Like a new,
now,
like interpretation or something.
Yeah, like covering yourself or something.
It can feel a little bit like covering yourself the first time you go back to a song that's maybe 4 or 5 years old that you haven't done in forever.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to go back and try some of these songs out and have muscle memory take over and realize we know them way better than we thought we did, yeah. And it actually sounds pretty great. That happens more often than not. Some of the, you know, the first and second album stuff is really complex just compositionally. So a lot of us going back and trying to revisit that stuff is just like remembering all the parts because there are so many for each song.
Right, and some of the current band that is with you guys now maybe weren't there when you were writing that stuff. Because it sounds like you guys write, from what I've listened to, it sounds like you guys really write as a band. Maybe you didn't so much earlier, but like these songs are very much sounds like a band. It doesn't sound like, oh, this is like a dude writing a song and this band is supporting the singer. Like, you guys are really like together, and the parts all make sense. So I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, different people, like the people that, I don't know the history that well of the band, but like maybe different people back in the day were there that wrote those parts that you were talking about that are complicated in the earlier stuff that maybe aren't there anymore, or is it like, is it the same people throughout? Like, maybe kind of fill in the blanks. I'm a little, I don't know too much.
So for the first record, Joe wrote all the songs and all the parts.
Gotcha, okay.
And he put together a studio band, like just via like Craigslist ads and, you know, maybe friends of friends or whatever, to play all that stuff on that record. When that record like hit on Pitchfork and the band started to gain some momentum, the studio band kind of fell by the wayside, and Joe needed to put together a live band of like people who could and were willing to tour, and, you know, and put in a lot of time to do that. And then basically that live band became the band for the next three records, with the exception of Andy Dole, who only plays on the last two.
Okay, yeah.
So the first two records are, you know, that's an era that Andy wasn't really around for, but the rest of us all were. But when you say that, you know, it's a band and we all write together, we arrange together, it's more or less correct. You know, Joe still writes the bulk of the song, you know, the song foundations and lyrics and melodies. But it is, you know, when we get in a room together, it's four creative musicians. We're all bringing stuff to the table. We're all, you know, affecting the outcome of a song. And no one, you know, it's I think we're kind of an anomaly in that sense, because it's everyone's main gig, whether, you know, you're writing the song or not. Mm. You know, no one has a side project. No one, like, plays with other bands. Everybody pours all their creativity into this one project.
Yeah, that really is an anomaly. You're right, yeah.
Because I feel like everybody's...
You know,
I'll let you finish your thought.
When I look at other bands who are sort of in our same world, you know, there's... You know, the guy who's singing the song, who wrote the song, who had, you know, developed the concepts for the band. But then maybe, like, the guitar player to his left has his own other thing. The bass player has his own thing where he plays guitar and sings in his own band. You know, or maybe, like, the drummer does the same thing. It's, you know, it's not like that with us. You know, the band is the band. It's a very, I think it's a exceedingly rare thing today for rock bands to have that happen.
Especially in this scene too, like the New York scene. Like, I mean, everybody's always doing everything they can to try to get known or get gigs or is there a better gig coming if I play with this guy, or let me keep all my pots on the stove just in case one kind of blows up or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's in the New York scene specifically, it's kind of even more of an anomaly, I would say.
Yeah, and it's understandable. I mean, you know, if you're gonna live in a place like New York or Philadelphia, actually, I'm the only member of the band who still lives in New York. Everybody else lives in Philly.
Nice.
But if you're gonna be like about that life, especially in New York City, where you're gonna like live with like 100 roommates, and you're gonna put your life on the line at least for a few years to try to like be an artist and be a creative musician, it makes sense to try to have like as many irons in the fire as you can until hopefully one, you know, becomes the thing. But for us, that wasn't ever really necessary, and it wasn't ever really something that any of us were interested in. I think we all kind of just like we're true believers in this one band.
And that's awesome. And that's what I kind of want to lead me to my next question is, you guys just came out with Pretty Years, and that came out maybe almost 2 months ago now at this point, middle of September. So how was that like?
Yeah, almost 2 months.
Yeah. So now you guys have like, now we're saying on your, the album before this was the Lose, and that was like your first solidified four-man group. So now, how was it going back into the studio for this newest album? And what was like the juices, you know, the flowing? What was like, what was the, how was the vibe going into this album?
The vibe was, it was a lot of hard work. I think I'd be lying if I said it was like a super good time putting it together. It was, you know, it's, we write pretty democratically, even though Joe brings most of the material. And there were a lot of disagreements about, you know, what the record should be. But once we got the songs all like basically down to what they were going to sound like, actually making the record was amazing. We did it in 4 days.
Wow.
Down in Dallas, Texas, with John Congleton. You know, we had a shorthand with each other just as musicians, after having played, you know, close to 300 shows with these same four people before making this record. It made a huge difference, creatively, interpersonally, in terms of like efficiency. Everybody was kind of just like ready to do it. We felt like we were a little bit deliberately loose and underprepared when we went down there to Texas to record. And when we told this to John, he was like, you guys are one of the like most overprepared bands I've ever seen making a record. And to us that was an educational moment, because we thought like, oh yeah, these songs are like barely put together. Let's see what happens if we just go put them down now.
And you guys are more used to, like, for the previous albums, like you were saying, like making these complex parts and having them be a certain way. So even to, you know, to prepare in the way you did, thinking you were underprepared to the producer, it seemed like you were still overprepared, because you're coming from previous albums of, you know,
doing that homework,
doing that homework
reading.
And having playing these complex songs. Like, not that new album isn't complex, but it definitely has more of like, I could definitely tell like it's more of like you were in the studio kind of letting stuff happen, which can kind of like lend itself to a little more like honesty in the songs, I feel like. Maybe I'm wrong, I'm not sure.
No, I think that you're on the right track with that. You know, letting it be spontaneous, allowing ourselves to, dare I say, like even have fun making a record.
God forbid.
All of that led to what the record is at the end. And I think that's a road that we want to continue to go down. for whatever we do next. You know, if we're not enjoying ourselves, then like why are we why exactly. are we doing it?
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
So this record, it was, I mean, as hard as the work was, and as challenging as it was occasionally interpersonally, it was a joy to make, and I think that joy is apparent on the record.
Absolutely. And it sounds really great. And it doesn't sound too, and one thing I really don't like about a lot of bands today, a lot of albums where they sound like, a lot of albums sound very perfect and very polished and like to the point where it's just like you don't know how good the musicians on it really are half the time, because like you don't know how what kind of, you know, processor the guitars are fed to, the drums are fed through. So what I really appreciate about this new record for you guys and all of your records really is like you can definitely tell it just sounds real and raw in a good way. And it doesn't, not that that doesn't mean that it doesn't sound like perfect and good, but it doesn't have that like sheen to it that a lot of, like, I don't know if that was maybe because of the producers you guys worked or if that's like a choice you've made, but I mean it definitely sounds like gritty in a really great way. I don't know if I'm like verbalizing it the right way. I don't know, Steve, you want to
let me speak for Paul here. I was saying it's more of a natural feel to it than it has more of a I guess like a processed type of feel, like some kind of, like it's like you're like it's like an organic record. There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, for sure.
You shopped at the organic food store for that.
So you got that record at Whole Foods.
Yes. No, it's very good.
I mean, John Congleton, he definitely wanted to capture us like as live as possible. All of the tracks, the foundation is just the four of us playing live in a room.
Ah, see, that, I feel like that's always the way.
A lot of the lead vocals are like first or second takes.
Wow.
Some of them are even, Joe laid down a scratch vocal while we did the live band take, and John just kept it. It sounded great.
Are you serious? That's amazing. That really is amazing.
Yeah, we did the whole record. We were finished recording after 4 days.
Wow, that's so quick. You guys were just in and out. So you guys, you did your homework. You know, you did. You were prepared.
Yeah. And then we did another 4 days of mixing, and then that was it. It's funny that you mentioned it's not processed sounding, mm-hmm. Because a lot of the individual sounds are highly processed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, just, like we would record a basic band track, and it would just sound like a rock band in a room, and then we would come back and listen to a mix that John Congleton did, and something about it would sound like wildly different, mm-hmm. Like 4th of July, for example, we laid that down, and we came back and like the fuzz on everything was like dialed up to 1,000 and it sounded amazing and totally different from what we recorded. But we were kind of just like, oh, that's the sound of the song now.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, yeah, maybe what I'm trying to say is that it was processed to sound different rather than processed to sound perfect in so much of, you know, like the way bands are processed nowadays. Like, you just hear it and it just, like, it has personality, you know, like it has more personality than like the average rock record. That's what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
Yeah. We're struggling. It's still early. But let me, because it's funny you brought up that song, Fourth of July, and because we noticed that's like a Bruce Springsteen song as well. So is Bruce Springsteen like a, it's like an inspiration, like some sort of like, role model?
Yeah, absolutely. We thought it would be cheeky to call that song Fourth of July, Philadelphia, parentheses, Sandy, mm-hmm. As a nod to Springsteen's song, 4th of July, Asbury Park, Sandy, because the song tells a story of a kind of a scary incident that happened to Joe while he was hanging out with Alex G and Alex's bandmates in Philadelphia last year. And Alex has a song called Sandy, and so we thought we would tie it all together in like this very cheeky way. But like way beyond that, Springsteen is like, it's just part of, at least for a couple of us, it's like part of our DNA. I was raised on Springsteen. And I think that I just feel very lucky to have been like raised by people who are really into music.
Yeah.
I think it's so nuanced and so there's such like a generosity to it. He's the ultimate inspiration. I just finished reading his memoir. It's like fantastic. It made me cry like 50 times.
Wow. Yeah, I've been looking forward to getting it. I haven't picked it up yet. My dad was a big Springsteen fan, and he got me into music, his music way early on too. And it is a very fortunate thing to be exposed to that kind of music as a kid, because you're, you know, what's on the radio, you know, in the mid '90s or late '90s when we're growing up, and like, you know, at that time, it's not the same. And Bruce Springsteen's music is so sprawling and anthemic.
Eclectic.
Yeah, and it really must plant seeds, you know, that you don't even realize at the time, and then it starts coming out, especially if you become a music. Maybe it helped you become a musician. You know, you don't even know, because yeah. I play drums too, and I remember learning how to play the entire Born in the USA album, because like the drums were kind of, you know, I'm not dissing Max Weinberg, but the drums are overall very simplistic on that record.
They put pack in a punch though.
Yeah, but they're amazing.
They're amazing. Yeah, he serves the song. That's yeah, what
simplicity
you need to do.
Sometimes is the best thing.
It's true.
Born in the USA, the song. Fun fact, not to give away too much of the memoir, but that song is a first band take.
What?
That's insane. Think about that.
That's mind blowing, especially for how big of a hit that was, and how like that really changed Bruce Springsteen's career. Consider that was a one take thing. And I know that used to be actually the first recordings of that song is on a thing called Trax, which is like his unreleased stuff, I think. And he originally made it on a 4-track recorder, and it was like a slow version too, and he eventually changed it into this like rock anthem.
Wow.
Yeah, that record and the Nebraska record was all like written at the same time, kind of in that style.
Wow.
That's why he's one of the best. You know, you can't, what are you gonna do? We got Bruce Springsteen.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like there was definitely a period in my youth where, you know, I thought Springsteen was corny dad music, and I thought that like Butch 16 Stone was the greatest record ever made.
But, hey, I was right there with you.
You know, my late teens, early 20s, Bruce started to kind of seep back in again, and it never left.
I feel like that happens because when you're like a young kid, you know, you listen to like your parents' music. Like I listened to a lot of Billy Joel when I was a kid, and I listened to my parents' collection, and then you kind of get like, when you get like a teenager, you're like, now you kind of want your own music, you know, like
you want to rebel against that.
You start searching for your own stuff, and then eventually you come back and you're like, you know what, that really is good, you know. It's not like I was misinformed in my teenage
years. It's good,
it's
good. Like if it's good, it's good. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, so you definitely, you know, and I guess it's how you also evolve too, as you as a musician, you know, you're taking these like old school artists and you're taking some more current guys, you know, maybe even Bush, I don't know, you know, we don't know. When you hear Glycerin, you know, it just always sounds so good.
Yeah, I mean, that record does sound amazing. They're Nirvana's, the UK's best attempt at a Nirvana.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that was like their only album I know, though, was 16 Stones.
They have a couple more that are probably slightly less than essential.
They wouldn't be in the Best Buy, like the 20 essential album or whatever.
That was a great way to put it. Slightly less than essential.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people like it. I never revisited Bush after 16 Stone.
Well, I would love to continue to talk about Bush, but we're running out of time a little bit. So I just want to wrap up and ask you a few more questions. I know Steve, you wanted to ask.
Whenever a band we have on has a Wikipedia page, we like to do a Wikipedia fact check because we don't know who writes those things.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like this.
Okay, good. So we read on there that you guys were from Staten Island, and you know, we living in Brooklyn, we live in Bay Ridge, which is literally like 20 feet from the Verrazano Bridge.
Yeah.
We want to know, is that true or false?
It's both true and false.
Oh, damn.
I'll explain.
Okay, please.
So Joe grew up in Ware Town, New Jersey, which is like an inland town, but that's like down near Long Beach Island.
Okay.
When Joe like left the house to go to college at Fordham in Manhattan.
Okay, yeah,
his parents moved from Southern Jersey to Staten Island. He lived at home on Staten Island while going to Fordham. So he lived on Staten Island when he made the first record, started to put a band together. And that was sort of at the height of like 2008, like Brooklyn music scene nonsense. and it was also, you know, the MySpace era. So Joe thought it was a good idea to list that the band was from Staten Island because he thought that that would be like a talking point.
Got me talking.
And sort of set us apart from a lot of the, like, the Brooklyn band heard at the time. So it wasn't false, but, you know, like, the first time I ever went to Staten Island was to do, like, a Pitchfork TV thing with Joe at his parents' house in 2009.
Oh, so what was your...
So it's...
Sorry, what was your first take on Staten Island? What would you think?
It was very surreal the first time I went to Staten Island. I was taken aback by how, you know, if someone just picked me up and dropped me there, I would walk around and say like, oh, I'm probably in like Woodbridge, New Jersey, until I see like, you know, like an NYPD police cruiser, and then I'm like, oh, I must be somewhere in New York.
No, it's kind of suburban more than it is like a more urban feel, like you would go to like a Brooklyn or a Queens or something like that.
But it's got that urban twang to it.
It does.
It's got a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, definitely.
I like Staten Island a lot. I think it's a weird, cool place.
It really is. Have you gone to the Staten Island Mall over there? That's my jam.
I haven't been to the Staten Island Mall, no.
Okay, they have anything good there you could eat? No, they usually got just like Chinese food.
Pan Express, you know, the basics.
Yeah, they got the base. I'm trying to think. I was trying to give you some good tips, but I had nothing. Oh, they do have a Ruby Tuesdays there now, so if you want, you know, a little burger or something. Oh, no, Red Robin, that's what it is, Red Robin.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
So just check it out. Check really it out when you get over there.
Panda Express on Staten Island Mall. All right.
Yeah, just write it down. It's hot tips from Steve
hot
over here.
Tips. I'm giving you all the Staten Island, you know. Hit him up when you get there.
I'll have to tell Joe about that.
Yeah. Just to kind of wrap it up, I have an actual like serious question I want to ask you. I've been seeing your guys' band name. I'm in a band too, so like I remember when I started my band like 2008. I saw you guys' names playing similar places that we were playing, and I think I almost played a show with you even one time. And obviously your band like took off. My band is still doing my thing, but I recently saw your name again. I was reminded of you guys when you did a Divinyl split with Kevin Divine, right? We're big fans of Kevin, and just curious how that came about, or if you could tell us a little bit about that.
That came about via a couple different things happening. We had kind of like known Kevin for a while in kind of like a mutual admiration, like tweeting at each other kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Joe maybe had met him a couple times at shows. You know, we never really toured or like hung out or anything. In 2014, we did a tour with Brand New, who have been close with Kevin for a really long time. Mm-hmm. He opens a lot of their tours, like going back years and years. There's sort of a, you know, like a all in the family vibe there.
Right.
So Kevin decided he was going to do this split series. He told us who else was going to be involved, you know, like Meredith from Perfect Pussy. Who else did one? Matt Cause from Not a Surf. You know, so there, it didn't take a lot of convincing for us that it was going to be something that we wanted to be involved in.
Right, totally.
And sort of at the same time that we got that invitation, we had been talking to Jesse Lacey from Brand New, excuse me, about about maybe him like producing a song or two. Basically, just about going out to Long Island to their studio and seeing what happens.
Wow, that's amazing! That's an amazing honor. Wow, it's great.
So yeah, he's his fans did not really take to us, but I think that there was a genuine admiration on his part of our music and ours for his as well.
Right.
So. With those two things kind of happening at the same time, we thought it was a good idea to just combine them. So we said, hey, Jesse, Kevin wants us to do this split. We think it would be cool if we did the song with you, and then there would be, like, you know, kind of a story behind the song. And that's how it kind of came together. We did Aerobed with Jesse at the brand new, like, studio complex in Long Island.
Awesome.
You know, we had kind of this like folky acoustic thing. It sounded like maybe something that would have been on Lenz's Alien or maybe something between Lose and Lenz's Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse kind of like heard it, liked little bits of it, forced Joe to kind of just like rewrite it on the spot.
Wow. The power of Jesse Lacy.
And then, yeah, he was kind of just like, so this song needs a bigger chorus. And Joe was like, okay, well, what do you want me to do? And Jesse was like, well, write one, like right now.
Damn, so he's like a producing Nazi.
Kind of. Like, he's just not, he's not precious about what he does musically. He knows what works as far as like songs that can get 2,000 people into a room versus like 400.
Right, right.
And that's kind of how he gave Joe a pep talk of like, just do something simple and impactful. Like, you have the talent, just like do it now. You don't need to take weeks to think about it. So we did that. Did the song with Jesse. It sounds like what it sounds like. I think we kind of like it. It's a little bit left field for us. Like it's got a little bit of like a modern rock sound that I don't know if we'll ever really go for again. But it was just cool and fun to do. We love Jesse, and it was fun to hang out and do some work with him.
Yeah, that's perfect for like a one-off, you know, just like, yeah. Oh, change it up, and you get to do it with Jesse and Kevin Devine. I mean, that's awesome, man, really. Wow.
Yeah, so that's how it all came together. And then we did this really cool tour for the Split series where everybody who did one came on this sort of like traveling circus, like variety show kind of thing. So it was... It was a really wonderful thing to be involved in. I'm really happy we did it.
That's great, man. And I don't want to. I would keep talking to you for the rest of the day. I'm enjoying this very much.
Yeah.
And we thank you very much for joining us. And I'm just going to kind of wrap it up because we got to be out of here by like 1 o'clock. But I did want to ask you one final question because
sure.
we're going to play a song of your guys after we finish our conversation, and we played actually 4th of July before, so that one's off the table. But I was just wondering, is there any song of the new songs that kind of surprised you when you played them live kind of for the first time on this tour that the crowds kind of responded to immediately? Was there any song that kind of like stood out live that really like grabs the crowd or feels good live that maybe not like, oh, the single or something, but like anything that kind of surprised you on tour that maybe we could pick off the album, maybe play that afterwards?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I would choose the song Well.
Okay.
That fits solidly into that category. We had no plans for it to be a single, but as soon as we started playing it live, we kind of were like, oh, did we screw up by not releasing this? Because the crowds love it. So, yeah, Well would be my choice.
Okay, that's the one we're going to do. Matt, thank you so much,
man. Thanks,
Matt. Really appreciate it.
I hope you get to eat your breakfast now because I'm excited for you.
Thank you for having me, guys. It was
all right.
Fun.
All right, man. Enjoy your Sunday. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Ba-boom.
All right, Matt from Cymbals Eat Guitars. We're going to do as he says and play the song Well off their new album. I'm excited to hear it now.
Yeah, get it going.
Okay. Made it to the manor tree. Name a lion at my feet. Oh, she whimpered fitfully. I
You guys a little brief taste on that song. You guys can go check that out right now. It's on Spotify. It's on, you know,
album
on iTunes.
Years, yeah. Cymbals and guitars.
That was, man, well.
That was well. I could see how that could really go over,
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Oh,
in a live setting. So basically, we're done.
Thank you, guys. thanks for listening.
Yeah, we ran a little long with our interview.
Yeah, we were doing good, but then we got that Divinyl juice, and you know what, we love Kevin Divine and Brand New and Jay Lace.
Yeah, we try to play it off like, you know, because I want to just be like, what? What?
I see you moonwalking.
I'm just like, woo!
Can't even laugh. I'm like, all stuff. I'm like,
yeah, Big Flig's a little sick right now. He's a little under the weather.
Yeah, I'm a little you know, a little nasally. We had to cut that song short because we are cutting short on time.
Yeah.
But
we do, like, you know, we'll do our housekeeping little thank yous.
Yeah. If you got the drops, I got the volume,
well,
bro.
Hang on. I wanted to do this because I want to do the thank yous because I don't really have anything new to report other than you know, I just want to say thank you to everybody. You hear this song? I just want to thank everybody. Can you still hear us over the
yeah, thing? I can put this low. Are you, this the whole song?
Yeah, I'm just playing the whole song.
Oh, okay, I'll put this a little low.
So thank you to...
I just want this to be this like...
This is the backing, the backing track.
It's just backing track?
This is the whole song.
Oh my God, this is beautiful.
Hey, sounds nice right now, right?
Yeah, it does. This is Stroll Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I do have a read for the record store upstairs, but you know, I'm not going to read it this time. I'm just going to go off the top of my head.
Oh yeah, let's say what it is.
Yeah, we got Secondhand Records upstairs. They're operational, fully functional, 1345 Decalb Avenue. I'm staring into Paul. I did not even add him. They threw him into the trash
can. He's not reading the read at all.
No, I am
He's
not.
He's looking at my eyes. He's reading my eyes.
I'm looking at his eyes. That's open upstairs right now. We saw some dudes buying some vinyl, selling some vinyl, I think. You could do everything upstairs. All your music needs, funk, punk, and everything in between. So if you can't make it here, just by chance, you know, all that traffic on the BQE, sometimes it makes people late, so you can't get here on time.
True that.
But in case you can't get here, you can go online, secondhandrecordsnyc.com. So you can even shop online.
Perfect.
That's it. So that's upstairs. We're downstairs. And one day we'll also be upstairs.
Maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see how that works out. But anyway, we want to thank Matt Whipple from Cymbals Eat Guitars for coming on. We want to thank Point of Order, our Radio Free Brooklyn boys who do the show right before us.
Yo,
they covered for us last week when we were out.
That's respect.
Appreciate that. I want to thank you, Big Flig.
And I want to thank you.
I love this.
This is so sexy. I wish you could stay for another hour with this song.
Just listen to just nothing but Dido for the next 24 hours. But yeah, and thank you to our listeners. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Listening to us. And hopefully, you know, next week we're going to be back. We're not sure what the guest is going to be just yet, but you know what? Follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Boom, boom, boom.
The Stroll Show BK.
Yeah, yeah, Stroll Show BK.
That's all we got. But not next week, but 2 weeks from now, we got U-Bred Raptors. And then just confirmed this morning, we got High School Football Heroes coming on before their Skanksgiving show opening up for Less Than Jake. And I think
awesome.
Mustard Plug
is
playing. It's either Mustard Plug or Big D and the Kids Table. So we're going to get some ska for you guys. And you know I love that shit. So That's all I really got. You've been this Stroll Show Ready for Brooklyn. I can't say it enough. I'm just loving Dido right now.
Should we just play out on Dido? Or
let's just play it on Dido. I don't even give a shit. All right, everybody. Have a great day. And God bless all your fantasy football teams. Unless I'm versing you, then I hope they suck.
Yeah, I hope AJ Green sucked.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you, Anthony.
Oh, Vinny.
Thank you, Vinny. Vinny, are you up?